Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you Christmas shows from radio's golden age. I'm Mark Levalier. A lot to listen to in this hour. Later on, One Man's Family and the Passing Parade. But first, a detective show. It's Nick Carter. And from what I can tell, the first and maybe only broadcast centered around Christmas from the series' long run of hundreds of shows. This heard on Christmas Day, 1943, on the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Nick Carter, Master Detective. Tonight's curious adventure, a special Christmas story.
Nick Carter's Christmas Adventure, or the Mystery of the Reluctant Contributor.
Well, Nick, we've been pretty lucky so far, haven't we?
Yes, Gubby, we have.
Which is another way of saying that folks are usually willing to contribute to your settlement house Christmas party every year, Nick.
You know, Scubby, I was just thinking about this last name on our list.
Yeah?
Rasper. I don't know him personally. Do you?
No, I don't, but somebody must have thought he was rich enough or interested enough in the work to make a substantial contribution. Oh, here's the... Hey, is this... Hey, Nick, what's that address again?
576 Milton Avenue.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And there's his name on the doorplate. Well, let's take a look, Scubby.
Well, gosh, this doesn't make sense, Nick. A guy with dough doesn't hide away in a place like this.
Well, knock on the door anyhow.
Doesn't seem to be anybody here, Nick.
No, hold it, Scotty. I hear someone coming.
Oh. Who is it?
I'm Nicholas Carter. May I speak to Mr. Rasper, please?
Nick Carter, eh?
Yes, yes. And this is my assistant, Scubby Wilson.
How do you do?
You, Mr. Rasper?
Yes. Well, come in, come in. It's cold out there. You're letting all the heat out.
Oh, beg your pardon. Come on, Scubby.
Yeah, I'm in, Nick. I'm in.
Well, what was it you wanted?
Well, Mr. Rasper, I've come to see if you would care to make a contribution to my Christmas party fund.
I never make contributions.
Oh, but you didn't let Nick finish, sir. The fund provides food and extra clothing for the needy and deserving
the
children.
The charity department's still working, isn't it?
Well, of course, Mr. Rasper, but my object is to provide an inspiration for the young people who are underprivileged.
People who haven't got any money are always trying to get it from those who have.
Then you aren't interested in seeing that the children of the Lincoln Hall District are helped to a little happiness on Christmas Day?
No, I'm not. Christmas is old-fashioned. I don't believe in it. It's a waste of money and time. Good day.
Oh, well, Mr. Rasper, it's always been a lot of fun for me personally, and I must say that I've always felt better for celebrating it.
And I'm inclined to agree with Scubby, Mr. Rasper. Christmas has always been a bright spot in my life, and I feel sure that if you knew the good it has done throughout the world, it'd make you change your mind.
Rubbish.
Well, in any case, a Merry Christmas to you.
Good day to you. Merry Christmas, indeed. It's a lot of nonsense.
Come on, Nick. Let's get back to civilization.
You know, Scubby, that man's wealthy, no doubt about that. And yet he's soured on Christmas and everything it stands for.
You said a mouthful, Dick.
You know, Scubby, there must be reason why he thinks that way. And I'd like to find out what it is.
Yeah, but you haven't anything to work on, Nick.
Oh, no, Scubby, I haven't. Not yet. But look here. I can finish up whatever has to be done this afternoon. Suppose you hop down to the newspaper office and go through the files there. There might just be something we could learn about Rasper that way.
Okay, Nick, I'll be glad to.
Then I'll have Riley check through the files at headquarters. It's a long shot, but something might turn up.
Sure, and maybe Patsy has run into something while she's been working down at the settlement house. She might know somebody who knows something about Rasper.
Yeah, she might have that. I'll ask her about it.
Okay.
And maybe with all of us working together on it, we may learn why Rasper's so dead set against Christmas. I'd certainly like to find out.
Hello, is that you, Nick?
Riley talking. I've been through my files here, and I can't find anything charged against a man named Ben Rasper. Oh, he was licensed to do business with a man named Howard Lowe, but Lowe died some years ago. Otherwise, Rasper is just a successful businessman. Yeah, that's right. I'll tell you what, though, Nick. There's an old fella named Fred Anderson who used to be on the forts who knows Rasper. Sure, you can find him at Lincoln Hall where you're giving the party. No, he's the watchman there now. Okay, Nick, that's all right. See you tomorrow.
Hello, hello. Oh, yes, Scubby? Oh, you did, huh? Sports promoter, huh? Well, well. What was that name again? Chris Baum. Why, yes, yes, I recall. Oh, no, I'll be there in about an hour, sir. I want to call Patsy first. Right. And thanks, Scubby. Bye.
Ah, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh,
hey, Patsy? How's everything, huh? Oh, fine. I'm coming down to the hall. Is there anything you want me to bring along? Huh? Why, sure, I can do that. But will that be enough, though? Okay. Yeah, Scubby just called. Oh, he found out something about Rasper. What?
You did, too. How old is he? Named Jimmy, huh? And he's coming to our party? Oh, fine, fine, Patsy. Okay, I'll see you in a little while. Bye. Oh, that's fine. We've collected enough to do this year's party up right. Now let's get organized. Riley,
Yeah? Your
job will be to get the kids and the needy persons rounded up.
Oh, sure, Nick. I'll take care of it. I got your list and the list from the social worker and from the church down there. And there are plenty of others who'll need a lift this year, believe me.
I know it, Riley, and I'll depend on you. Scubby, it's your job to see that the tree and decorations and gifts are taken care of.
Don't worry, Nick. Decorating is my middle name. I'll make Lincoln Hall look like $1 million in cash.
Good boy, good boy. And Patsy, You'll see to it that there's plenty to eat and drink for the party, so I won't have to worry about that. I'll take care of the bills, and you have the letters of credit the stores gave us. You know how to do that.
Sure thing, Nick. Good. I've been through it with you often enough before. I ought to know what you want by this time.
What are you going to be doing, Nick?
Me? Well, Riley, I'm going to do a little detecting. I'm going to look into those tips you, Patsy, and Scubby gave me about those people who know Ben Rasper. And by the time I'm through, I hope to find out why it is that he hates Christmas the way he does. And then, well, then, maybe I'll be able to do something about it.
Hello? Yes, this is Rasper talking. Yes? I sent you the bill, didn't I? Well, what if it is due on the 27th? No, just because it's a holiday, there's no telling reason for bills to be unpaid. Ah, goodbye. Darn fool nonsense, that's what it is. It's a lot of foolish...
Still talking big, ain't you, Rasper?
Who's there? What do you want?
Don't you remember me, Rasper?
No, I don't remember you. Who are you?
They used to call me the Kid. Chris the Kid.
Chris?
Sometimes known as the Human Flash.
Chris, you?
Well, it's been a long time, Rasper, hasn't it?
How'd you find me? Who sent you here?
A fellow named Nick Carter told me I'd find you here in your office, even if it is Christmas Eve.
Nick Carter? Oh, yes. Wanted me to give him some money for some fool party.
Oh, for the party at Lincoln Hall, I guess. He's never asked me for anything. Just gave me what I needed, when I needed it.
Yeah, so he hired you to come here and take up my time to get...
No, he didn't send me here. Just said I'd find you here, that's all. I came here on my own accord to... Just to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Ha!
Thought you'd say that. Well, I don't mind. Because it's on account of Nick Carter that I can stand on my own feet again. Not on account of you.
What's that?
You mind if I sit down? Yeah, it was on Christmas Eve that we won our first fight, wasn't it?
Fight? Oh,
yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I can remember the noise of the crowd, the glare of the lights, and the smoke curling around, and the brightness over the ring, and you leaning over me with that wet towel.
You got him going, Chris. Another one like that last round, and you'll have him in the ropes for the count. How do you feel now, kid?
I'm okay, Rasper. Just let me at him. I don't have to wait anymore. It's my meat right now.
You take your orders from me, kid. I'm the brains here. When you get the signal from me, you give it to him.
Okay, Rasper. You're the boss.
Little affairs after that, Rasper. And I always did what I was told, huh?
Yes. You're a good fighter, Chris. Good fighter.
I made a lot of money for us in those fights, Rasper.
Well, a lot of money. The old days, Chris. Lots of water's gone under lots of bridges since then.
I know. And the percentage you paid me didn't last long either. It went just like that water. But I didn't care much about things like that. Till the day a friend of mine came and gave me a warning tip. That started me thinking.
Oh, kid, how do you feel?
Oh, hello, Rasper. Where you been? I wanted to talk to you.
I've been around. What's up?
I got a tip today that you're signing up Timmy O'Day. You're going to manage him.
Who told you that?
Never mind. Is it true?
That depends.
Depends on what?
Look, kid, you're getting slow. O'Day's fresh. He'll be the next champ. If he wins this fight with you tonight, I'm taking him over.
If I win tonight?
I'm taking O'Day over anyhow. We've been together a long time, kid, and it don't pay to get into too much of a rut.
So that's all it means to you, is it? Money. The payoff, huh? What about all the years we've known each other? What about the things we've been through? Why, you...
No, don't get yourself all in a sweat, kid. It isn't good for you. You'll get your cut anyway. Don't worry. You'll get your cut.
I'll see you later. Rasper, what do I do? Tell me what to do. I can't see him. My eyes are all puffed up. He's cutting me to ribbons.
Tell me what to do, Rasper.
Don't bother me, kid. Use your own judgment. You're on your own, as of now.
But, Rasper, you always...
You're on your own, kid.
I can still see you sitting there in the ring corner, laughing at me. But that was the last thing I saw for a long time. O'Day saw to that. You must have coached him pretty thorough about my style. And then you really cashed in. Well, I haven't got much myself, but I'm still able to wish you a Merry Christmas, Rasper. Although I don't think you'll ever have one.
Chris, I...
Well, I got some things to do, Rasper. Carter asked me to pick up some things for the party at Lincoln Hall tomorrow. We always have a swell time at Carter's Christmas parties. Too bad you can't enjoy anything like that anymore. Well, as I said before, Rasper, Merry Christmas.
How can a man work with his mind whirling like a merry-go-round? Christmas Eve. God, it's a fine excuse for people to go around yelling at each other in the streets. Disturbing a man when he wants to get some work done. Oh, I might as well close the office and get some rest. Would have been home by now if the kid, Chris, hadn't taken up so much time. What Chris does for a living now. Wonder if... Ah, it's none of my concern. Get home and get some sleep. That's what I need. Who's that? I'm closing up. Come back tomorrow morning.
Oh, I'm glad I got here before you left, Ben.
Who is it?
It's Nina, Ben.
Oh, Nina.
I only stopped by to speak to you for a moment. It's getting quite late, and
Well, sit down for a moment, Nina.
Oh, thank
here,
you.
Here, let me get your chair.
I suppose it's rather bold of me to come after all this time, but I...
Why, no, Nina, no. I'm glad you did. Is there something you want?
Oh, no. No, there's nothing you can do for me, Ben. Jimmy and I are doing very nicely. I just wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas. I was in the neighborhood doing some shopping for the party that Mr. Carter's giving at Lincoln Hall tomorrow, and
How is he, Nina? Jimmy, I mean.
Oh, he's fine, Ben. He's full of life and interested in everything. He has a good head on his shoulders, and he's very handsome, too.
Oh, that's fine. Just fine.
You're looking a little tired, Ben. Are you feeling well?
Oh, yes, of course. I've been working hard, that's all. I don't spend much time at home. Not much reason to.
That's the way you wanted it, Ben. Don't you remember?
Nina, where are you?
Oh, Jimmy, there's Daddy. You wait here for Mommy like a good boy, won't you? I'm coming, Ben. I've been keeping your dinner warm for you. I hope you... What's the matter, Ben? You look as if...
That's nothing, Nina, nothing. I'm in a hurry, that's all.
Well, you're always in a hurry, aren't you? Never have time for...
Where's my dinner?
Sit down, Ben. I'll have it for you right away. This plate is hot now. Be careful that you don't burn yourself.
I won't. Salt, please.
Here you are, dear. Ben, when you've finished, won't you take time enough out of your business to help me get the tree decorated? I know Jimmy's too young to know much about it, but... I'd love to have his Christmas all ready for him in the morning. Look, I'll put him to sleep right away, and then we can start. See, I have some holly and mistletoe for the fireplace, and some...
I won't have time for that, Nina.
But, Ben, it's Christmas Eve. Surely you...
I have to get back to the office. I'm putting on a championship match for O'Day in January, and the things have gone haywire. Something that can't wait till tomorrow. Have to get it organized right away, that's all.
Ben, this is Christmas Eve. Tomorrow will be Jimmy's first Christmas. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
You and Jimmy celebrate Christmas any way you want to, Nina. I've something more important to do. Business is more important than sentiment. You certainly can see that.
Yes, Ben. I can see that. I've been seeing it more and more during the last few years. I thought that when Jimmy came, maybe you would... No, I was wrong, wasn't I, Ben? You'd even let your love for business break up our home.
Break up our... Oh, don't be melodramatic, Nina.
I'm not being melodramatic, Ben. I'm trying to be very calm and quiet about it. I've had a lot of time to think when I've sat alone here night after night. And those days on end when you've been away attending to your business...
And what has come out of all this thinking you've done?
Just this, Ben. I'm not going on any longer. Either you belong to your family... or your family will get along without you.
I have to rush, Nina. Good night.
Gout, good night, Ben. It's good. Goodbye. Jimmy and I are leaving tonight.
Look, I haven't time to talk about it with you now, Lena. By the way, this will probably take most of the night.
Good night. Goodbye, Ben, and Merry Christmas.
I never had much of a chance to make it up to you, Nina.
You've had all the chance you wanted, Ben.
But, Nina, I...
I just dropped by to say hello and to give you a wish for happiness during the holidays. It's hard not to share with you the joy I have with Jimmy. I wish you could see his eyes dance at Mr. Carter's Christmas parties. Unfortunately, on what little I make, we can't very well afford to have our Christmas at home, but somehow we don't miss it. Everybody has such a grand time at Mr. Carter's party, and Jimmy does enjoy every minute that he's there. Goodness, I'll have to be on my way. Jimmy's waiting for me, and I have to make one more stop for Mr. Carter. Good night, Ben, and Merry Christmas.
This stuff doesn't taste like anything. Nothing at all. I can't understand what's got into me. It's good food, fixed the same as it always is. It just doesn't taste right, that's all. What's that? Someone at the door this time of the night? I'm coming.
Hello, Ben. It's Fred Anderson. Glad I found you at home.
I'm always at home this time of night.
Yes, I suppose you are, Ben. Can I come in?
Of course.
I brought your package, Ben. Nick Carter sent me around with it. Said you'd probably be here alone tomorrow and he'd like you to have it.
Carter? What's Carter sending me?
You might open it and see, Ben. I'm no mind reader.
That's any reason why Carter would want to... Bottle of port wine. Let me see the card. Merry Christmas from Nick Carter. What's the idea? You know anything about this, Fred?
No, but Nick Carter's a funny duck. There's lots of things people don't expect him to.
Why, I don't even know the man. Only saw him once and then... You want a glass of this wine, Fred?
Don't mind if I do, Ben. Seeing as it's Christmas Eve, I don't mind at all.
There's some glasses here somewhere. Say, how do you open this thing?
Yeah, I'll do it for you, Ben. Yeah, that does it. Well, go ahead, you open it.
Eh? Oh, yes, all right.
There, ain't you drinking with me, Ben?
Huh? Oh. Yes, I will.
That's a ticket. Well, here's Merry Christmas for you, Ben.
Yes, Merry Christmas. Well, have you been keeping yourself, Fred?
Oh, I've been sort of working around Lincoln Hall since I was retired from the force.
I see.
You know, while I was coming here tonight, I was thinking about those old days when I walked a beat. Funny, most folks call them the good old days, but I don't.
You did all right in those times, didn't you?
Oh, sure, I got along. I was just thinking about the different attitudes folks have nowadays toward being given a hand. They appreciate it more, it seems to me.
Charity's still charity, Fred. That hasn't changed.
I guess it's all in the point of view, Ben. I guess you haven't changed with the times. That night I met you near the bridge, I was sure you were going to see that you were headed in the wrong direction and wake up in time. Huh? Remember that night, Ben? Well, it's Christmas Eve. You'd just come from the arena. They'd handed you your walking papers because you'd let them down cold.
Well, Merry Christmas, officer.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you, sir. Well, what are you doing out on a night like this, Ben? I thought you'd be up at the arena getting the New Year's fights lined up.
What? Oh, it's you, Anderson. No, I'm not at the arena anymore.
That's so. What happened?
They decided tonight they'd rather have Davis take over my job. Fine Christmas present, that is.
Well, that's tough news, Ben. What are you going to do now?
I don't know. I can't seem to think straight.
Oh, that's a crazy way for a man like you to talk. On a Christmas Eve, too?
Christmas Eve. That's never been anything but a jinx to me. First I get stuck with that no-good fighter all day. Then Nina leaves me and takes my son with her. And now the arena throws me out.
Well, maybe you better stop and find out what it is you're doing wrong, Ben. Maybe you're the one that's to blame, not Christmas Eve.
They all take advantage of me. I made all the money I could for them, but I'm not going to do it anymore.
Take it easy, Ben. Take it easy. You better go home and think it over.
I have thought it over, Fred. And I know what the answer is. I'm going to make money for myself and nobody else. I'll show these people. I'll make so much money they'll come crawling to me on their knees. I won't have to ask for anybody's sympathy.
You don't pay to think like that, Ben. You'll regret it. Now, look. I know that Bill Boynton, who runs a shoe store down on Elm Street, is looking for a man to buy in with him. Why don't
Me work in a shoe store? Not in your life, Fred. I'm going after the big money. Big money. That's the only thing people understand, and I'm going to get it.
Well, now you got it, Ben. You're one of the richest men in town. And what's it got you?
Why, I don't know.
Ben, it's too bad you don't get around and see what nice people there are in the world. People like this Carter fella, for instance. Does a man good to know people like him. Makes you feel there really is a Santa Claus, to see him bring the smile to the kids' faces at those parties he gives down at Lincoln Hall. Oh, well, I'll be getting back there now, Ben. I've got a big day tomorrow. I'm not as young as I used to be. Well, Merry Christmas to you, Ben. I'll tell Nina I saw you. She'll be at the party tomorrow with young Jimmy. Good night, Ben.
Well, Patsy, how's it going?
Oh, Nick, it's wonderful. Oh. They're having a grand time.
Oh, that's fine, Patsy.
Hey, Patsy, look. Over there by the door. What do you see?
Where, Nick? Well, who's that?
That, Patsy, is Ben Rasper. Oh, I hope he's come to join the party.
For heaven's sake, so that's the man I've heard so much about. Well, he looks scared to death, Nick.
Look, Patsy, will you go over and make him welcome?
Oh, of course, Nick.
Good.
Hello there. Merry Christmas. I'm Patsy Bowen.
Oh,
won't you join us?
How do you do? I hope I'm not... Do you mind if I just watch?
Well, of course not. Come right in.
I wanted to thank Mr. Carter for the gift he sent, and I...
Nick's right over there near the tree. Come along.
Children seem to be enjoying themselves, don't they?
They certainly do. There's Lieutenant Riley handing out the gifts there. Scotty Wilson with him, standing next to Mr. Carter.
Yes, I met Mr. Wilson.
Look at Lieutenant Riley. He's having as much fun as the children.
So I see. Oh, there's a nice-looking boy there, Miss... what's his name?
Where?
That one over there.
Oh, that's Jimmy. He's a nice boy. His mother was a big help to me in getting the refreshments ready. There she is over there on the far side of the hall at the table, see?
Oh, yes. Her son.
Yes.
Yes,
Nick?
I see.
Oh, Nick, we have a new guest.
Oh, hello there, Mr. Rasper. Merry Christmas. Glad you could join.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. I came to express my appreciation for the gift you sent me. I hardly know how to...
Make nothing of it, Mr. Rasper. Your being here is thanks enough for me.
Mr. Carter, that little boy coming along the line there, Jimmy, I think his name is, do you think I might give him... I mean, could I hand him his gift, do you think?
Why, certainly. Riley. Mr. Rasper here wants to lend a hand. Can you use him?
Sure thing, Nick. Come along, Mr. Rasper.
Thank you, Mr. Carter.
You just hand them these packages as they come along, Mr. Rasper. And enjoy yourself, man.
I will. There, little girl. Merry Christmas.
Oh, thank you.
Say, she liked it, didn't she?
Well, they all appreciate a little kindness, Mr. Rasper. Now, here's a gift for that little boy there.
Oh. Hello, Jimmy. Here you are. And a Merry Christmas, son.
Oh, well, that was the day for you. Gosh, I haven't had so much fun since last year.
You played those games harder than any two kids in the bunch, Scubby.
Yeah, and lost practically every time.
Yeah, kid. Well, you really have to be in condition to keep up with these kids. Boy, they're wonders. Hey, where do they get all that energy?
That will be one of the world's great mysteries forever, Scubby. Nick, what are you thinking so hard about?
Oh, I was just thinking of the way Mr. Rasper took to the party.
Oh?
Hey, don't you mean the way the party took to Mr. Rasper, Nick?
Yeah, I never saw a man open up the way he did. Well, it was wonderful. The children just flocked around him.
That's one of the greatest jobs that Nick Carter ever did.
What do you mean, Riley?
Well, Patsy, you'll never believe it, but when Nick and I went to see Rasper to get a contribution to the party, he was the hardest case of unadulterated unpleasantness I ever saw. But somehow Nick managed to get under his skin and bring out, well, what you saw tonight.
Well, for heaven's sake. How did you do it, Nick?
Well, it wasn't difficult, Patsy. You see, I could see when we first spoke to Rasper that he was fighting something. But I didn't know what it was. But from what Riley, Scubby, and you told me, I found that three different times Christmas Eve had brought him bad luck. First, the fighter O'Day. Then Mrs. Rasper had left Rasper on a Christmas Eve, taking his son Jimmy with her. And third, he'd lost his promoter's connection at the arena, also on Christmas Eve. Well, the whole thing added up. Rasper associated Christmas Eve with a list of unfortunate incidents and fought anything that suggested the holidays to him. He made a lot of money, but it never brought him happiness. The big thing for me was to make him realize that people and Christmas meant good and not evil. And from what I saw this afternoon, the Rasper family and the whole neighborhood, for that matter, is going to benefit by his awakening to that realization.
Oh, Nick, that's wonderful. You deserve a kiss for that.
Oh, thanks, Patsy. I'm glad you feel that way, too. You know, I'm happier this evening because of Mr. Rasper than I would be if I'd solved 20 murders. He's made this a really merry Christmas for all of us.
Nick Carter on Tuned to Yesterday from the 25th of December, 1943 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. You're listening to an hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Now a program that had one of the most devoted set of fans ever to Grace Network Radio, It's One Man's Family. And this episode almost didn't happen, as a year before, the program was dropped from the network and a massive letter-writing campaign revived it, though it went from a half-hour to 15-minute episodes. This broadcast first heard on Christmas Day, 1950, on NBC.
One Man's Family, brought to you every weekday night at this time, transcribed by Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer, and many other fine, dependable pharmaceutical products. Overheard between Henry and his granddaughter, Teddy, in the living room.
Now, Teddy, what I wanted to say was, the other day possibly I made certain references which might be open to misinterpretation.
Oh, goodness, Father Barber, you don't need to apologize to me.
Yeah, we'll clear this up. Now let's see if we can find out what you might have misinterpreted.
Mm-hmm. So that's how it is with the barbers today. Chapter 21, Book 81. The mounds of gaily wrapped Christmas packages under the tree in the barber living room were distributed amid sounds of merry confusion early this Christmas day, and the house, which has been bursting at the seams since sunrise, is strangely quiet now in the pre-dinner hour, hushed as if waiting for the reassembling of the clan for Christmas dinner. Since late last night, when she came in from the hospital, and throughout this crowded day, Teddy has noticed Father Barber looking at her in an oddly wistful fashion. She didn't realize until a moment ago, when he invited her into the living room, that he's been trying to maneuver a moment alone with her.
I have been hoping to have a word with you, Teddy. Oh, now, don't look alarmed. I'm not going to lecture you.
Oh, you may if you like. I'm sorry I behaved so badly the other day.
Yeah, I wanted to say, if by any chance you misinterpreted...
Oh, please, I'm afraid I was pretty hysterical and...
No, no, now let me say this, Teddy. It's been bothering me. I'll feel better if you'll allow me to re-examine...
Hey, where is everybody? Where's Paul?
Well, he's up in his studio, Cliff. He'll be down in a minute.
Claudia and Nicoletta are helping your mother, Clifford. Perhaps you might see it. There's something you can do.
I just went out there, Dad. There isn't a thing.
Clifford, don't sit down. I've been trying to have a moment alone with Teddy.
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah, yeah, you'll forgive me, my boy. We'll be through here shortly.
Oh, it's okay, Dad. I'm sorry I busted in.
It's very difficult on Christmas Day to find a quiet place for a conversation.
Hasn't it been a turmoil, though? But I love it.
What I wanted to say to you, the other day I possibly, inadvertently, that is, I made a certain casual reference to...
Boy, is that bedlam at my house. I couldn't take it anymore. Hi, Teddy.
Hi, Dan.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, let me stretch out on this davenport and listen to the pulsing quiet. Oh, boy. 6 little girls, 3 toy pianos, a drum, a xylophone, and a portable phonograph. That's too much for me. You know the record they like best, Dad? It's the loud one Cliff gave them. Horns, cornets, slide trombones, French horn, bassoon, tuba. They can't get enough of it. They got mounds of quiet gifts like crochet hooks and paper dolls, but what they really like is noise. Wow. Oh, this is great. Nothing but the crackling of the fire and the distant rattle of dishes and the soothing smell of turkey.
Yes. Jack.
Ah, peace, it's wonderful.
Jack, all day long, Teddy and I,
Oh, pardon me. I busted in on something, huh?
No, but it's just that we finally...
Oh, sure, Dad.
Clifford!
It's me, Mom, Jack.
Oh, Jack, we need somebody out here to open a jar, the lid is stuck.
Well, I may not have enough strength left, Mom, but I'm willing to try it.
Where are Vivi and the children?
They'll be right along.
Father Barber, I think I know what you're referring to, and please, there isn't any need to go into it, because...
Very nice of you to say so, Teddy, but I won't rest easy until I've cleared it up, if you don't mind. Now then, let's see if we can find out what you misinterpreted. When we touched on your little girlhood here...
Father!
Huh?
Oh, come in, Hazel.
Oh, hello, Teddy.
You came over alone? Where's the rest of your family?
Oh, they'll be right along. I walked over ahead because I just couldn't wait to read you a letter from Pinky. It just came, special delivery. Oh, good, you've heard from him.
You know, Hazel, amid all the confusion around the tree this morning, it crossed my mind 2 or 3 times that we should have phoned the boy by long distance.
Oh, we've tried all day. We couldn't get through to the lumber camp at all. Apparently, nobody's answering the phones up there.
Oh, here, sit on the arm of my chair.
Is that light all right, Hazel?
Oh, yes, this is fine.
Well, it's written from Higby Mills, Oregon, Camp 2. Written Christmas Eve, last night.
Yeah.
Listen to this salutation. We'll have to read it again to everybody. Dear Mom, Dan, Margaret, Hank, Uncle Jack, Aunt Betty, Sharon Ann, Mary Lou, Janie, Abby, Debbie, Connie, Aunt Claudia, Uncle Nicky, Joan, Penelope, Uncle Cliff, Andy, Uncle Paul, Teddy, Grandmother, and especially to Grandfather.
Oh.
He says... I am sitting here alone in the bunkhouse because every lumberjack in this camp disappeared toward town this afternoon, leaving me here to keep the stove going so it'll be warm when they come back. Just an empty bunkhouse, snow outside and branches snapping in the cold. I never felt so far away from home in my life. Your big Christmas box from all the family came this morning, but I won't open it until tomorrow at 7:30. I will try to have my Christmas the same time the kids wake you up to have yours down there.
Oh, it was 6 o'clock, still dark.
I'm going to celebrate Christmas in this stinking bunkhouse, slowly opening packages and thinking about all of you, and especially Grandfather. Tell him I will never get in debt again, because it is now obvious to me that debt leads only to disaster, just as he so often said. After my regular payments to Grandfather, I didn't have much money left for presents, but I have sent a redwood burl to each of you.
Huh?
A redwood burl?
Yes, redwood burl.
And if you'll keep them in water, they will sprout, although they won't be trees for 300 or 400 years. These burls will seem a meager Christmas gift, unless you realize how much love goes with them. It seems to me, Mom, that our family... Here, Teddy, you read the rest of it.
Yeah.
I'll go and see if I can help Mother.
Poor Hazel. Let's see. Our family Christmas is the finest thing that happens in the whole year. Tonight I can shut my eyes and see you all around the tree at Grandfather's and hear Grandmother playing Silent Night on the piano. And then there's some dots, and he says, I stopped riding here to cook my dinner, warmed up pork roast, Boston baked beans, store cookies, and buttermilk.
Yeah.
There's still no sound here in the bunkhouse except the breathing of Ophie, my boss, who came home a little while ago and fell asleep on the floor. I moved him to his bunk. It's quite a contrast to Christmas at Sea Cliff.
Yeah, man's drunk.
Poor kid. Now, let's see. Now that Ophie brought the truck back all in one piece, I will drive in town and mail this before I go to bed. It's a clear, cold night now with one very bright star in the east sky. It reminds me of a Christmas when Grandfather read aloud to Hank and me the story of the Star of Bethlehem. We were 6 and 7 years old, but I can still remember sitting close to him on the Davenport, eating a popcorn ball and listening to his quiet voice. The Yule log was burning and the tree sparkled with all the decorations, and it was sure great.
Grandfather always makes Christmas a wonderful time for the children in our family. And I'm grateful for all the pleasant memories, and maybe this is the time to tell him so. Love and Merry Christmas, Pinky.
Yes.
And you really do, Father Barber.
Huh?
Make Christmas something wonderful for the children. I can never have happier memories than my Christmases here when I was a little girl.
Yes. Teddy, I was afraid, you know. There are times when I... Yes, well, good smells coming from the kitchen, eh?
Yes.
What time is your friend Maudie Pemberton coming?
Well, the minute she gets off duty. It was awfully sweet of you to ask her to dinner.
I like the girl, Teddy. Yes, good roommate for you. Yes, yes, if you insist on living away from home. Oh, Hazel.
Well, Father, can you see now why that letter was a little difficult for me to read aloud?
Yes, yes, Hazel. That boy is coming along.
Henry, we all want to see the letter.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yes, yes, Fanny. You know, he's a lonely boy tonight.
Oh, there comes Paul. Paul!
Yes, Teddy?
There's a wonderful Christmas letter from Pinky. Come and hear it.
Cliff, come on. Well, you finally heard from him, Hazel.
Well, yes, Paul. It came special delivery. But somebody else will have to read it aloud. I don't seem to be up to it.
Fanny, let me wait until the whole family is here, eh? And I'll read it myself at the dinner table, eh?
Oh, let me take you to the kitchen. I won't mind hearing it twice.
Mother Barber, I missed out on something last night.
Hmm?
What was that, Teddy?
Well, I got in too late from the hospital to hear you play Silent Night.
Oh, now.
You're on again, Mom. Come on.
Clifford.
You know, there ought to be a Christmas recording of Mom playing Silent Night. She plays it better than anybody in the world.
Oh, Jack, my fingers are so stiff sometimes.
Why, Mom, they rippled last night.
Play it now, Mother Barber. Please do.
Oh, well.
Come on, Mom. Here. Sit you down.
Yes, Fanny. Teddy shouldn't miss out on such a ceremony. Yes, yes. It's part of Christmas here. Play now. Come, come.
Well, all right.
Yes, yes. Teddy, there's a new year coming, my dear. Don't you think you'd better reconsider and come back home to live?
Here's the family again.
Paul, shall I move back to my own room?
Teddy, my dear, this is your home. We'd all love to have you. You know that now.
Oh, yes, it'll be so wonderful to be home again, Paul.
One Man's Family, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 25th of December, 1950 on NBC. We move on to our last program. It's the Passing Parade with a special... It's the story of Christmas seals, heard in December 1943.
How do you do, everyone, to this special edition of the Passing Parade and the story of one of the most valuable pieces of paper the world has ever known. This precious fragment of paper is no larger than a postage stamp. Yet behind it lies a great adventure, heartbreak, comedy, and triumph. Well, a $1,000 bill measures 2.5 by 6 inches, or about that size. And yet, my tiny bit of paper is far more valuable, and thereby hangs the tale. It is 1907. We're inside the bedroom of a poor woman's house in Wilmington, Delaware. A boy of 14, a thin, nervous-looking boy with a bright spot of color on each cheek, sits on his bed and grins sheepishly at his mother, while a country doctor taps his chest, listens to his breathing, takes his pulse. After a few minutes, the doctor straightens up, grins back at the boy cheerfully, and says,
Well, it's back to bed with you, Milat, and I'm going to fix it so that you can play hooky from school for a while. Then, smilingly pulling the clothing back over the boy's chest, the country doctor crosses the room, swings the window shut, and picking up his bag, goes out of the tiny bedroom. The boy's mother has said nothing. She has not smiled. She has not moved. But now she rises, a strange wooden look on her face, and silently follows the doctor out. In the kitchen, she stops. The doctor's washing his hands at the sink. And on his face, too, is that peculiar, woodeny, fixed expression. She looks at the doctor a moment, sinks to a wooden chair by the stove, rocks back and forth, her worn fingers held over her face, and she speaks. His father died of it. My brother, too. Now my son, my beautiful, strong boy. The doctor finishes washing, dries his hands, and picks up his bag. He places a hand on the woman's shoulder. We shall do what we can. You know, people have been cured of it. Yes, people have been cured. 1 out of 100, 1 out of 1,000. What does it matter when you know that you're poor, that you can't buy special food, sunlight, rest? And even then, most of them die. Millionaires and paupers. Tuberculosis in 1907. Death warrant. Not a quick death, a kindly death, no. The heartbreaking wasting away. The periods of fever, the treacherous periods of hope, of feeling great. Why, I'm going to get well after all. And then the wasting again. And then the slow death. The doctor knows it is useless, and he goes out of the house to face the black hour that can come to a decent medical man when he knows that all his knowledge and his labor are empty, futile things. And what does the mother do? She does what all mothers have done at such times. A smiling face toward the slender boy who lies in the bedroom. Words of hope and of love. Then she straightens her back, puts on her shabby black coat, and goes out of the house. She walks clear across Wilmington to a place on the Brandywine River where miracles have taken place. A crowded little tuberculosis sanatorium where the wonderful new ideas of Dr. Trudeau and others are being tried out. And where the sure death of consumption has become less of a sure thing. A great gamble still, but where the players are slowly beginning to win against the odds. The mother goes to the sanatorium and makes her plea. A health worker named Emily Bissell is visiting, and in the office she hears the mother's cry. My son has it. We have no money, but I will work. I will work forever if you will take him in. Just give him his little chance. Just a little chance. And the young health worker turns away as she hears the nurse make an answer. I am very sorry. We cannot take another patient. We are filled up. And as we are poorer than you, we are about to close. Without a word, the mother picks up her purse and leaves. The nurse and the visiting health worker look at each other. Then Miss Emily Bissell speaks. No, you are not going to close up. You are not going to give up. You will take her boy and other women's boys. I'm going to find the money by next spring. Miss Bissell, we won't last till spring. We have a month to go. The money is not here. We have to close within a few weeks. Then, said Miss Bissell, somehow I'll find the money now, this Christmas. Emily Bissell made the rounds in Delaware, looking for a rich man to give her $300 to keep a humble little tuberculosis sanatorium going. She didn't find the rich man. You see, people don't believe in giving money to hopeless causes in the winter of 1907. TB can't be cured, why waste your money? She didn't find her rich man. And that failure in the 35 years since that hour, that failure has led to one of the greatest triumphs of America. The amazing victory that has made a tiny little rectangle of gummed paper a thing more precious than rubies, that represents the wealth hidden in the American heart. Emily Bissell, in the despair of that money-hunting period, and is there anything so depressing as going around trying to dig money out of people who resent you, have no faith in what you're trying to do. Well, at any rate, Emily Bissell, at one of the worst moments in this struggle, had brought to her attention an envelope. It was from Denmark. It was a Christmas letter some Danish working girl might have sent to her fellow in America. It had a Denmark postage stamp on it, all right, and Emily Bissell was no stamp collector. But what caught her interest were some other little stamps on the envelope. Were they for extra postage? No.
It seemed that in Denmark, people were paying a penny for these little seals, using them on Christmas packages and letters in addition to the postage stamps, and the pennies they paid for them were going to help sick people in Denmark. Emily Bissell knew in that instant that it had happened, that somehow the woman she'd seen turned away would come back with her boy, that the little sanatorium on the Brandywine River wouldn't close that year after all, that maybe every dollar of the 300 she needed would now come from pennies. Pennies from a new kind of Christmas seal. A seal that said Merry Christmas or God rest you merry, or any of the ancient words of love and friendship, but at the same time would bring hope to the hopeless, life to the condemned. 2 days later, Emily Bissell was at a printer's. Would he make some of these little seals for her? Sure thing, lady. Print them at cost and wait for my money. And later that day at the post office at Wilmington, would they let her put the little Christmas seals on sale in the post office, along with the real postage stamp? Sure thing, lady. Bring them right in. By Christmas, you ought to sell $100 worth. Only make it clear to folks that they aren't real postage stamps. All you got for your penny is them little seals that'll help battle the white plague. A week later, though, Emily Bissell learns that sales are not going well. People don't get the idea clearly. The whole thing looks like a first-class failure. And with that, she marches into a newspaper office. Will you print a little piece in your paper about the Christmas seals? Sure, lady, we'll use your story. And a few hours later, the editor of that paper sees the proof. Say, boys, whoever thought this one up is great. Look at the human interest. For every Christmas letter you mail, every Christmas card, every Christmas present, a penny going to fight tuberculosis. Why, the people will love it. Spread it over the front page. Give editorials to it. It's our Christmas story for 1907. Christmas passing and New Year's. And Emily Bissell in January of 1908, counting up the proceeds from the strange little seals. $300 clear for the sanatorium and $2,700 more. Americans had bought 10 times what she had asked for. And the rest of the story, of course, you know. Christmas seals have become as much a part of the American Christmas as turkey and cranberry sauce. The rich people and the poor people and the middling people all buying them. By the millions, we gladly take the sheets of 100 seals each year. A few people buy them by the thousands, but most of us put a dollar or two down and use the seals to place on letters and packages. There are some interesting things about the Christmas seals, however, that perhaps you didn't know. In 1907, when the idea began, almost 200 people out of each 100,000 population died of tuberculosis. Today, 3 people are cured, where then 4 people died. And the idea that the health worker used to save that little sanatorium now brings not $300 in each Christmas, or $3,000, but a great fortune to be used in stamping out tuberculosis forever. Another interesting fact is that in spite of all the sacrifices that have been put upon us recently, the Christmas seal sale will probably be greater than ever now, for in the American heart, it's a part of Christmas. The big gift going to someone you know or love, but on each package or letter, the tiny one-penny gift, which you make to someone you will never see, but whom nonetheless you may aid in bringing the gift of life itself. All this, more than 2,000 local associations, affiliated with the National Tuberculosis Association, a public educated in the war of destruction of a disease, once thought beyond all cure, sweeping through our country since a health worker looked at an envelope from Denmark and saw some odd little bits of paper pasted to it, and gave the idea to the new world. It's one of the amazing stories of the passing parade, the power of the rectangle of gummed paper that we call a Christmas seal. And there is a brief epilogue to this story, which, like so many other good things, took on a new burden the day the Japs came out of the sky and bombed Pearl Harbor. It's a pity that at Christmas time, and speaking of a thing like this, one must also speak of that day at Pearl Harbor, but we must always remember it, Christmas or not. This part of the story lies in that it has now become utterly vital that we win the struggle against tuberculosis. And a lot of people might not understand that, thinking that all of our efforts should merely go to winning the war. All of our efforts should, and all of our efforts should go in this struggle. Because during war times, disease invariably increases. Food shortages, about which we all know. Crowded housing, about which we all know. Feverish working conditions, strain, and all these trials of wartime cause the dread diseases, like tuberculosis, to sneak up on us again. And it is now realized by the government that a weakened civilian population may not win a war that will take a long, weary time to come to its close. And thus it is that the same plea that a woman once made for her son in 1907 to be admitted to a little sanatorium in Delaware once again goes out to all the nation. When through the Christmas Seal campaign, the people who labor to keep these doors open make to you this annual appeal. A little penny seal on every piece of mail that you send out. At least one sheet of 100 seals to each adult this year. For this is the year that we must guard, among all the other things, the health of our country that is now locked in its greatest struggle. No matter how many sacrifices this Christmas brings to us, the war bonds and the defense stamps and the vast number of appeals that we must meet, we must also meet the challenge of our traditional Christmas gift that is made through the Christmas seals to keep America healthy and to someday conquer tuberculosis. It is America's happiest little gift at Christmas, the penny gift to all who must have rest and perfect care, not in order to be happy, but in order to live. The little gift that prevents others from getting tuberculosis, which is why the Christmas seal is really the most precious bit of paper of its size. For after all, it represents the wealth of America's heart.
A Passing Parade special on Tuned to Yesterday from December 1943 in syndication. And that brings to a close this hour of Christmas shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more programs from holidays past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Happy holidays.